allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'm used to the 6:30 workshop.
Yes.
So the document that you handed out starts out by saying that you were asked to review and comment on Section 407. Is it that your comments are directed at the proposed changes to 407?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So we're starting from the same place.
Yeah.
And I have a question that really Tony needs to answer. In the risk assessment, it says submitted to Milford Township for review and approval. And I'm not sure under what conditions we would approve and whether approve takes on any liability, whether it would be for review and comment or questions.
Yeah.
Or consideration.
No, he had said at the meeting that review would go to somebody qualified to do it.
Right, but they're still not approving the assessment of the risk, right? I mean,
I think it's customary, because I go through this in almost all settings, like, aside from when you issue permits, like DEP issues a permit, like, when we have peer review, I'll call it, or review by someone, you know, it's always conditional that, you know, you applicant are taking the responsibility, but, you know, we are given our acknowledgement of your assessment. Do you understand what I'm getting at? I don't know how to properly term that, but we can ask Anthony that. Because, you know, I get reviews all the time for work that I do, and at the back end of it, it always says, you know, these comments are for, you know, counsel or advice only, you know.
Right.
Ultimately, you, designer, are responsible for this.
Right, right. You know, but particularly because it's a risk assessment, I want to make sure that it's clear that we're not taking on any liabilities that way. And in the hydrology study, it says a hydrology study may be required, and that goes back to kind of the whole reason that we got in this mess, which was that the review by the attorney was that subjective language was problematic.
Right.
And so if we have a may, we need to be very specific.
Is that on the smaller property or on the big property?
Well,
this is after we do a risk assessment. So I think the idea is that if we have the risk assessment done and then we make a determination that a hydrology study is required, you know, then it would be the obligation to do that.
Right, so the problem is if we don't give specific criteria as to when it's going to be required, mm-hmm. then it's subjective. And if it's subjective, they don't have to do it. That's
what they did to us originally, yeah.
Right, and that's exactly what this whole exercise is trying to avoid. So we need to have specific, okay, so let's say we do the risk assessment, what would be in there in general terms that would trigger having to do the hydrology study so that we're specific and we don't have this subjectivity where it's like, well, you know, we'll see if we like you. Because as soon as we get there, that's where we get into trouble and we know we don't have to do it anymore.
Well, I mean, the problem is everything that we would want them to do, they didn't do because of the condition. They were trying to get a conditional use without land development.
Right.
I mean, ultimately, we certainly could have required everything in the land development, but we were, I'm not sure what the term is, but we were not able to, right?
So, right.
We now want to be able to commit them to doing that.
Right.
All right.
Right. So we want to I just want to make sure that we're shoring up the language so that if that happens, we're not back in the same boat where, I don't really have to do it.
Right. If the risk assessment is proven to be such and such.
If it identifies this, and this, then you have to do the hydrology.
Yeah, then a hydrology study will be required.
Right. And then exemptions. Two issues. the tail end, as determined by the township, and we go back to the same issue of subjectivity, right? And then the 10,000 square feet. So the way this exemption is worded, even though the issue is water quality, and that's what we're trying to protect in this section, at 10,000 square feet, Wawa wouldn't need to comply with any of that.
Are they less than 1 acre?
10,000 square foot building you have.
Yeah, but I mean, it looks at the, you know, either the amount of development or a size of a building. So I think what we were trying to do is protect someone, you know, from having to put up, like, say they wanted to put up a pole barn.
I totally get what our intent is to do. What I don't want is to generate unintended consequences.
We get your stuff up front, right?
You know, if we have...
We got stuff up front for you.
If we have... if we have certain critical types, like I thought we had identified certain critical types that should do it all the time in the draft. And I would be hesitant for those types, particularly ones that are, you know, that are storing, I'll give an example of what's here, is potentially toxic chemicals or, you know, the flammable materials. Those items, I would, you know, I don't know that there would be a small enough footprint where you would say, yeah. I mean, I guess there's got to be a small enough footprint, but if we're going with 35 gallons of chemicals, I don't know how small the building would be that would be exempt from that part, right? So if you're doing a 10,000 square foot small store, no problem. But if you know, Wawa would fall into that category by itself, right? It's a retail store. So depending on what you're selling, if you've got some of those critical items where safety and water safety would be a concern, then I think we should make sure that they're not accidentally lumped into that exemption. And I know just belabors me.
And that's where the risk assessment should come into play, though.
Well, this language would exempt them from having to even do that.
That's what she's saying.
The risk assessment should be done no matter what, because that starts the whole thing off.
So you wouldn't exempt anybody from the risk assessment?
Not from the risk assessment, no.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I thought we were trying to provide exemptions for...
Yeah, but that's where you get your exemption from, your risk assessment.
Well, you can do the risk... I mean,
well, that's two layers then. That's what I see there is two layers. One is that if it's innoxious and it's shiny, you're exempt.
Yeah.
And if it's not innoxious but it's shiny, you do the assessment and then see what the assessment is.
I would agree, because I agree you're creating two layers. I think you have your exemptions and just say flat out, if this is how you fall, you're exempt from this whole section.
Right.
That's how I think you would write it. If you're going to create exemptions, that's the exemptions. I would say, okay, you're this or this, and then you're exempt. But if not, then it automatically you have to do the risk assessment. So I think it's either or. You're
right.
Either exempt or you got to do the risk assessment.
Right.
And that's step one.
Okay.
So I think I agree. I think we need to be specific and just say, here's, if you fall in these criteria, you're entirely exempt. If not, we want a risk assessment. And then the risk assessment will then determine the full scope of what they will have to do during the conditional use.
Right.
And, you know, I'm totally on board with, you know, not wasting everybody's money or time if there's, you know, small stuff that shouldn't be generating. But I also don't want to see us accidentally take some dangerous, stuff and lump it in that category by, you know, just because it's a small footprint.
It's a tough one. There's a fine line, but that's where...
Well, it just creates more language, right? It's just, you're just making it longer in order to cover everything you're trying to do without... Yeah?
Yes and no. You write too much language, why have a conditional use?
Well, the conditional use is to attach the conditions.
Right.
Yeah. But, I think the idea is we want to protect the small business, that from going through all these necessary steps.
I agree. That was always my problem with this.
But also protect the township from being able to require things that could ultimately impact it, right?
Absolutely.
So, I do agree maybe the initial step is you're either, if you fall into this, that you're exempt, right? And I think we need to be very specific what those exemptions are. And then if not, you have to do the risk assessment. And then you do the risk assessment, and that the level of impact will then determine how much more information you have to provide for
right.
us.
That's
really what the risk assessment is then giving us the ability to say, okay, based on what you're doing, we want a hydrology study. So like if we take the warehouse, had they come in under this new criteria, obviously they wouldn't fall under any exemption, right?
Right.
Of the scale of it. But they would have to do a risk assessment, and then we would have the mechanism to require them to do a hydrology study. But smaller shops, might be able to be exempt based on the amount of development and what they're storing.
The little office building across the street,
yeah.
It's just not... It's not going to generate the same kind of issues, and you don't want to make it overly burdensome.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of an example, but if you have a...
If you're selling clothes or you're selling antiques, and you're not selling any chemicals?
Yeah, you
most
could
people
do
should not have to go through that.
A small That's office building or a small retail shop, small office building, small retail shop, you just... less than 1 acre of disturbance.
Yep.
To me, I don't think the 10,000 square feet is necessarily a large building, depending on what they have in there.
That's the issue that we don't cover. Yeah.
So maybe we outline, if you store these elements, right?
God bless you. Thank you.
I thought we added that. If any of the chemicals are stored that around the state's hazardous chemical list, it would be automatic how to go through.
Well, these two haven't been integrated yet.
Okay.
So I think that's part of where my questions come in. As we mince these together, we may be able to make sure we have that all.
You also. There's a quantity kind of limit too, though. Everybody has hazardous chemicals. You have hazardous chemicals in your kitchen.
You got some, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So what level are you talking about?
That's
your cleaning supply. That's the quantity part. That's what I mean. Just that it's in the verbiage that you have it doesn't mean that necessarily you have it in a quantity that's. Needs to be controlled.
Needs to be regulated.
We all have cleaning supplies.
That's what I'm saying.
We all have paint.
Absolutely.
We all have stuff.
Fuel. We all have batteries.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We all
yep.
have
gas cans.
Lithium batteries.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. So just can't.
It's
if somebody comes in and says, "Well, I'm going to have xylitol, or I'm going to have whatever kind of." Paint thinner or something because it's for something to do, and they're going to have a 5 gallon bucket of it.
Right.
Does that?
That's where the risk assessment tells you the specifics.
Right, but if they come in and they say that, you know what I'm saying? If they come in and they say, yeah, well, I'm going to have a 5 gallon, does that automatically put them to risk assessment?
Well, 5 gallons versus.
I guess it would depend on 5 gallons of what.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Some people use sulfuric acid for etching.
Yeah.
So there's,
that's what I think. You can put quantities. 5 gallons versus 50 gallons versus 500 gallons.
That's what I'm saying. If you're gonna have that kind of verbiage, you need to have. It needs to be able to be. Oh, okay. This is reasonable. You can have the chemical, but is it going to be in quantity? I don't think it's fair to penalize someone that's gonna have a three, five-gallon buckets there. Two for one that they use all the time, and then two because they get a good deal.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, like, 5 gallons is not a lot of it.
Of course, it's not, but I'm just saying that.
But 50 gallons is.
As soon as you say it that way, I think it needs to be defined that there's an allowable quantity, even if it's on the list.
Well, yeah, I think zeroing in on those numbers is probably.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I just want to be careful now, because there's a lot of bad stuff out there that's used in super low quantity that would, in essence, not really have an adverse effect for the usage.
Well, what we're talking about is exemptions for doing a risk assessment.
Correct.
So right.
It's really the exemptions that we're trying
exactly.
to
that, come
in
up
with numbers that yeah. to give, exempt them from having to yeah. do the whole check.
Sure.
That's what we're trying to do.
Yep. Tony, on the document that, hello, by the way.
Hi, how are you? Sorry, I'm
no problem. On the document that was, that John handed out the last meeting,
yes.
With the risk assessment section,
mm-hmm.
he was saying submitted to Milford Township for review and approval, okay. and I was concerned about whether the approval of a risk assessment would generate any liability. Or whether there's a better verbiage that we would want to use other than the word approval.
I think our original 407 referred to hydrogeologic studies.
407 is all non-agricultural mm-hmm. and non-residential uses.
Right, and I think what we're you know, I think what John had mentioned last time was not every project is going to need a study. There has to be some projects that may just need a risk assessment. And I think I walked in while Ray was making the point of the storage of hazardous waste. I know myself, I don't like to go to the gas station too often, so I keep 10 5-gallon jugs of gas in my shed, five for the mower, five for the snow blower, five for everything else, and just in case.
I got five at my house, my generator.
So I'm one of those guys that has all the little red containers all filled up at any given time. So yeah,
I think her concern was about
you need to tell the fire department about that.
I do.
Using the term approved. Like mm-hmm. maybe if we have a town representative, whether that's someone here or a third party review and approve a risk assessment, you know, are we really approving it or are we accepting acknowledgement of it or somehow softening it to where we don't have
liability? I think with any type of an ordinance that we do, we always put in language that, you know, the applicant is responsible for providing something, and we're just there to review the study as part of the overall application. So we're not approving the study; we're approving whether it's a conditional use or whether it's a special exception. The zoning hearing board would be approving; they would be approving that permit application, not the study itself. Now they can consider the study as well as any other evidence that's presented in making that approval. But they're not going to rely solely on that risk assessment. They're going to rely on the opinion of the consultant who reviewed it.
Sure. So you would just stop the sentence at review.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very good.
Yep.
Okay.
So then the other thing, Tony, we're talking about is really the idea is at the start, it's either you're exempt because you meet this criteria, mm-hmm. or if you don't meet that criteria, then you have to immediately start with the risk assessment. I think that's basically where we're at.
Right. There was a little bit of language there that I was concerned was subjective and kind of puts us back in the same position that we started with, that we were trying to remedy through this right. process.
And,
so.
And I just wonder, is there something out there that can be looked at that has specific criteria for when you need a risk assessment?
That's what we're talking about. I mean, I think we generate, you know, I had used in the last paragraph, you know, less than 1 acre mm-hmm. or, you know, 10,000 square feet. I think we can, you know, come up with it. It's going to have to be specific, like, you know, if you fall into this criteria, you're exempt. But if you don't meet all this criteria, then you have to do a risk assessment. So it's one of those things, like, I, you know, a lot of times in applications, it's if you meet all this criteria, you move on.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't meet this criteria, then you have to immediately go to the risk assessment.
Yeah, and I guess a lot of that's going to depend on whether they're truthful in the application too.
Well, I mean, that's going to be true with anything.
That's problematic. But yeah. Yeah.
So.
And no one could review it without and in any way accept it without, you know, the fact that they're relying on the accuracy of the information that's being presented to them.
That's all we can do.
Yeah.
So, but I think just because they're exempt from the risk assessment doesn't mean that they still can't comply with all 407. They still have to do that
right.
For conditional use.
Right.
So, I mean, they still have to divulge their whole application. It's just a question of, do I have to do this risk assessment or not? And, you know, and go from there.
And when we use the term risk assessment, are we looking at it as for example, DEP looks at a phase 1 environmental impact study?
Well, that's the language that's been presented thus far.
So, yeah, I mean, the idea is we want them to, based on their work, their scope, whatever it is, to do a risk assessment to tell us, you know, the level of impacts as it relates to the rest of 407. And then from there, we will have the mechanism to require a hydrology study if we feel it's necessary. Which leads us to the next point is, you know, should we have some criteria about what will kick into a hydrology study?
Right, because if it just says it may be required, we're right back to where we were at the start of this, that it's subjective language, so they don't have to do it.
I have to assume that one of the criteria is going to be proximity to the aquifer.
Well, I think proximity, I think we could also designate size, too. I mean, you know, again, if we're...
Yeah, if you're on top of it. If you're a mile and a half away, you know, maybe there's a different criteria. I don't know. I don't know the answers. I'm just raising the questions. I would suggest, though, that whatever we do with criteria, that it applies across the board to everybody. It's just one of those things where sometimes you get bogged down in being so worried about exempting someone that you don't want to have to do the study, that you start taking away from the criteria because it might affect this industry or that trade or this industry, and then the criteria is not the same for everyone. So
yeah, I think relative to the exemption versus doing an assessment at all, I think that was really the intent there is to protect the small guy, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really what we're trying to do is, like, we don't want to penalize the small guy. But then when we move on to doing a risk assessment, now we want to protect the interests of the town, right?
Well, what I would say is we want to protect the doesn't present a hazard guy.
Well, understood, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah,
we're trying
so
to,
the small guy, assuming that also industry-wise or, you know, activity-wise does not present a danger.
Yeah, because I can think of instances where you'd have somebody that builds a small warehouse for an unintended, non-hazardous storage of substances, and then later on has to sell the property and the owner intends to store hazardous substances.
There's so many different scenarios that can arise.
So that's why I say it has to be across the board.
Yeah. But that's where a conditional use, you would say, if the use changes, they got to come back in for another conditional use.
Well, if you're a warehouse before and you're a warehouse again,
the use hasn't changed.
And all you're doing is what you're warehousing, that doesn't change the use.
Mm-hmm. It changes what you have in there, though, and that's where we.
That's not a change in the use, so you can't force someone to do something.
It's still being a warehouse.
It's still being a warehouse.
Right. It's only if the use is being
changed. Yeah, but that's why we got into the different types of warehouses.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't tell you the content of what's in the warehouse. There's a big difference between I'm warehousing carpet or he's warehousing fireworks. right? The level of danger or hazard that it presents is pretty wildly different. But as a use in terms of zoning, we're both warehouses.
Yes, yeah, it's still a warehouse.
It's got to be a trigger.
So, but if somebody sells their building, right? Let's say somebody's storing carpet and they sell their building and a paint store wants to come in, right? And they'd still have to get a zoning permit, which would trigger...
Not if it's not a change of use. They don't have to come back in.
They still got to come in for a zoning permit.
They need a permit, but they don't need another conditional use if it's the same use as before. Yes?
Yeah.
It's still non-residential warehouse use.
Right.
And that was one of the reasons that we were looking at all these different warehouse definitions, because the traffic that they're generating, the activity load is very different, the content and the hazards it presents is very different across the different types. So it, that's one way that, well, if it's going to be a refrigerated warehouse instead of just storing carpet, then we can make you come back in for conditions. But when you're just talking about what's the content of what you're storing there,
that's where we go back to.
Yeah.
If anything's going to be stored that's on the state's chemical list, you have to come back in.
We might have a that might be
that could be
very careful.
Any.
Yeah, I mean it could, but I mean ultimately going forward, if someone is going to put up a building and they're going to store carpet, right? I mean, they still need a conditional use, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So during the conditional use, you put the condition
any change,
on that
any
change of quantity
requires a new conditional
you come
use.
Back. Right. You know.
I think we're going to have to do that on each one.
I think you have to do that on each one. That way, it gives you the opportunity to look at the application.
Can you say that in the ordinance that's what's going to happen? That's going to be part of the conditional use.
You can put in under requirements for conditional use. There's a section in our ordinance that has requirements that deals with, you know, how many copies and this, that, and the other thing, you know, the North Arrow, all that nonsense. You can put in there that one of the requirements is going to be a listing of hazardous substances that needs to be produced. So I think we should do that, because I think then everybody who applies for a conditional use would have to list what they're going to store on premises. We did
no,
it.
But
for
what you're saying is what will trigger a new conditional use, and that's what I'm saying. What? How do we put that in the ordinance?
Correct.
That's going to be part of a conditional use approval. That if you do change the use substantially, or how it's going to be, even though. Yeah. Somewhere we have to put that in the ordinance as part of. One thing about this truck, and I know we're going back and forth about this York.
We haven't even gotten that yet.
No, but we're.
It's good for it.
I know, but we're. When we get to that, they're specific in there about conditional use. What's going to happen with a conditional use? What are you required for? And what I'm saying is we should be consistent
with that.
We're putting it in 407 or whatever, and how does that apply? But the same language should be in our warehouse thing. So, and I like the idea that it comes right out and says, you know, conditional use is going to require this, or you're going to be required a conditional use. So that's the kind of thing that gets them back in for. This Board of Supervisors, the Planning Commission of Melford Township, has not tried to be overburdensome to the applicant. I think we want to stay that way. I'm afraid that we're getting in a slippery slope trying to define who's going to be exempt. You know, is there... And I agree with you that the little guy that's it, but 10,000 square foot building could have a tannery in it too.
Yeah,
you know, that's like, what we've been talking about.
You know, so
10,000 is not a number. We could do 5,000, but I mean, I think the idea was to protect an existing business or a new business from putting up a storage barn or a truck barn, or you know. Something that they're going to do. But maybe that's too big.
I tend to agree with you, it's not too big.
I don't think it is, but...
But the boogeyman is the use or the change of use in the same use.
Yes.
That's the boogeyman. So, and not calling out specifically conditional use in the way we have our ordinance now is another thing that I see would be real. Add a conditional use hearing, you're required.
Can we put in the exemption part of it? That the exemption is given based on the contents, the risk factors, and if that should change, another conditional use would be needed. Something along those lines.
Yeah, the only problem I see with trying to define the exemption, and this is an overall issue, is by trying to define the exemption, you're actually granting someone an exemption based upon a non-scientific study. Okay, we're not going to store any hazardous substances on this list. So someone comes in with an affidavit in their conditional use saying, I'm not storing anything. I'm just going to have an office space. I might have some, you know, printers and copiers and stuff like that. So it's just normal office space stuff. Normal office space stuff can be real dangerous. There's more benzene in some of that stuff than there is in the gas. So there's we're trying to define an exemption, and I find it's you get lost in that and you lose sight of the overall thing, which is impact. Okay, we want to make sure that there's not a great impact on what we're granting or what the applicant's looking to do. And I think the only way we can say that is the way they do in the warehouse logistics ordinance. Everybody's going to do a risk assessment.
Should we ask our engineer to review our section 426?
Absolutely, we got off track.
John, let me ask you this question. In your experience, generally speaking, what's the average mom and pop kind of business in square feet?
For most small businesses, probably somewhere between 5,000 and 10,000 square feet. That's probably the average, what I'll call small business.
Very seldom over that.
Yeah, I mean, anybody smaller than that is usually locating somewhere like in a strip mall or something. Like if you're gonna do 2,000 square feet, you're going into like a strip building or you're gonna rent.
Using an old house.
It's gonna be some type of logistics center.
So if you're gonna be quote unquote a small business that wants to open up their own facility, I mean, you're probably looking at around between 5,000 and 10,000 square feet. I mean, most of the structures that I put the paper are in that range for small businesses. If you're much bigger than that, then you're not a small business. You're doing something much on a larger scale.
Depends on whose definition of small business.
Yeah, but I mean, I think one of the things which we talked about last time, we were just using a building size. I mean, we were saying we were also using the criteria of the 1 acre disturbance too, which is going to throw you into an NPDES permit. So, you know, the building could be 12,000 square feet, but it's the issue of how much, you know, the level of impact or disturbance in the development.
Right, and that's what we had agreed on.
I think 1 acre, you know, you could be 5,000 square feet and still have over an acre of disturbance, you know, depending on how much yard you want or parking lot you need.
Something too much to disturb an acre.
How much grading you have to change.
So, I mean, an acre is, in and of itself, is a pretty tough threshold. Because, you know, most property, there's not a lot of, like, less than 1 acre areas that you can develop anymore. Everything, you know, when you start getting into extensive grading and impacts of that nature, you're going to be over an acre of land. Which is going to trigger us into the risk assessment regardless.
Yeah, I'm just looking at some of the non-residential uses that are currently allowed as conditional uses. I can't imagine that any of these is going to be under an acre.
No.
I mean, it's like animal hospital, assisted living, senior housing, bulk fuel storage facilities, bus terminals, car and truck washes, clubhouses, lodges, and country clubs, commercial nurseries and greenhouses, commercial stables. You're looking at over an acre on all of them.
Yeah.
Manufacturing, light manufacturing. Now, some of them you might not, restaurants, you might not have an acre of disturbance, depending how small it is. Now, here's a couple of my favorites are solid waste disposal and staging facilities. So if someone comes in for a solid waste disposal or a staging facility, obviously you're going to want a risk assessment. Because you want to know what's going to be stored there. Is it going to be empty containers? And I think, Kevin, you and Ray, you remember when the gentleman came in for the storage of the...
Dumpsters. The dumpster business. Yeah. Dumpster container business. Container. Yeah, right there.
Right over here.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you know, as long as they were not going to be filled, they
were empty only.
Empty only. Right.
Yep. No overnight storage of any refuse in it.
Density also, you know, makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, so
in my own little way, I'm saying that you should have very few exemptions for risk assessment.
we could tighten it up and just have a few minor ones, and that's it. Otherwise, they have to do it.
And health facilities, hotels, motels.
I mean, all that's going to, those are all going to trigger.
Mini warehouses, mobile home parks, multifamily dwellings, natural resource. Everything in this DD district is going to require some sort of risk assessment. That's why I don't want to spend a million hours on trying to exempt somebody.
You know.
I know.
That's one of our concerns. We don't want to hammer the small guy either.
I agree, but
somebody wants to open up a 2,500 square foot retail clothing store like Ups and Downs used to be. Should they be doing a risk assessment?
John, how much would a risk assessment like this cost if you were engaged by that small business owner to do one?
I mean, I could see for a small business.
Well, let's use that retail example.
Well, I think the risk assessment will be, you know, the cost will be somewhat tied to the amount of development, right?
Right.
I mean, if somebody's doing something small, you know, it could be, depending on who their representative is, because
I can't speak
about everybody, but I mean, I think for a small thing, you know, you could do something for several $100s. But I don't think there's a lot of work that needs to go in something that small to demonstrate that there's no impact. But, you know, ultimately the individual's got to hire someone who's qualified to put information together. And then I think the cost will go up from there depending on the amount of development. But I think, to Tony's point, I think most of those uses will require it. Partly because most of those uses are going to be well over an acre of land. I mean, they just are. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Between your setback, your parking.
I mean, I did a project in New York
that
was less than an acre, and it was a coal building that was storing magazines, mm-hmm. comics. So on Route 209, they were about just less than an acre of land, and they weren't quite 10,000 square feet, maybe like about 8,000 square feet, but all they store is comic magazines. They ship them worldwide.
I have a friend who has a little warehouse that's less than 6,000 square feet.
Yeah, you know Charlie's son?
Yeah. He's, so that's all my, his stories is
gentlemen, did you